you're 30 miles, I think, from Indian Point. So I thought I might do an Indian Point lecture for you and educate you about the dangers so that you can close it down. And, of course, we're going to talk about Fukushima and Chernobyl because these are the issues in the news at the moment. Well, they're not in your news, but there seems to be a media censorship. And I did hear from someone quite senior who's in touch with the White House that the word went out from the White House to the State Department and other departments that post-Fukushima, they're not to talk about it. You know that Obama is pro-nuclear power. It's funded by Exelon, and some of his major advisors come from Exelon, including John Rowe, who's the president or chairman of Exelon, and Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel and others work for Exelon. I would like half an hour with Obama, who I consider to be an intelligent man, who loves his little girls, to talk to him as a physician and a pediatrician about the medical dangers of nuclear power. But it's not easy to get in to see him. I thought I'd start tonight as a physician telling you the dangers of radiation. I also want to talk about the incidence of cancer, how it's rising in the population, particularly here, I think. One of the reasons cancer's rising is that in the 50s and 60s, America, or the weapons makers, tested weapons in the atmosphere in Nevada. And your country was absolutely doused in radioactive fallout. They knew what they were doing and they didn't care. They knew that radiation causes cancer, and it's interesting that John Wayne made his last film in Nevada near the test site. And his whole crew and all of his film stars and he himself died of cancer. We know that radiation causes cancer. The National Academy of Sciences put out a report a couple of years ago saying, no dose of radiation is safe. Also, radiation is synergistic with chemicals that we live with every day, all these crazy chemicals that are put into our, you know, washing our hands in the bathroom and the stuff we use in the kitchen and drinking water out of plastic bottles. Plastic bottles contain BPA, which is a carcinogen. And it's also a hormone mimicker. It mimics estrogen. And so one of the reasons we think that little African-American girls are having very early menarche and getting periods in pubic hair the age of 5 instead of 12 is partly, they think, because, or we think, they're drinking water out of plastic bottles and Coke out of plastic bottles and the like. The evil genius who thought of selling water, which should never be sold, it should be free in our taps and all water is potable, and selling it to plastic bottles, which is filling up the environment with plastic which is not biodegradable, was wicked. No one knows where that water comes from. You know, it looks great in our Maine. But the mafia dump chemicals in the aquifers in Maine with great impunity. You don't know where the water's coming from. And to buy water in plastic bottles, it's like people are walking around like they're the Freudian oral anal stage. Everyone has to have something to drink, you know. Got to take water. And then you've been taught that you've got to drink a lot of water. That's not right. Biochemically, you've got a good set of kidneys. You drink the amount of water you require, and kidneys moderate the electrolytes and the amount of water that you need. You don't need to drink 5 litres of water a day or 2 litres or whatever it is. Just have your cups of tea and your coffee, and don't drink water out of plastic bottles ever again. There's an island in the North Pacific in a sort of gyre, twice the size of Texas, made of plastic. Twice the size of Texas. And it's breaking into little tiny particles, and the albatrosses are feeding their babies with plastic. And this is just totally destroying the ecological system of the oceans and the seabirds. And I've just been to Turkey. All over the fields, and that Turkey loves their food and they're very agrarian, there are plastic bags being sort of ploughed into the fields. There's plastic everywhere. And I've heard in China, there are those styrofoam containers everywhere in China. I mean, we're really nuts. And the law in this country is that the chemical companies don't have to prove that chemicals are safe before they launch them upon the market. We have to prove they're dangerous by getting cancers or whatever. I mean, this is really crazy stuff. And I don't know why my colleagues, physicians, don't stand up to these chemical companies. Well, we're busy, we have to keep up with the literature, you know, we're busy with our patients. But it's imperative that we practice preventive medicine. Not wait till a patient presents with cancer, but rather prevent it. And that's what I've kind of tried to do all my life. And in that one of my books over there called If You Love This Planet, I go into chemicals and toxicity and synergism. Do you understand what synergism is? That, you know, one chemical plus one radioactive element to cause cancer, it's not one and one equals two, but one potentiates the effect of the other to increase it by like 10 times. What I thought I'd do is teach you how radiation causes cancer. And I went to this in medical school in 1956. I had a wonderful lecturer who taught me about a man called Muller, who irradiated Drosophila fruit fly with X-rays. And Drosophila reproduce, you get hundreds of generations in a year, whereas we take ages to reproduce, and we're not going to live to see what harm we've done to our descendants. And if you irradiate Drosophila fruit fly, they develop a crooked wing or an abnormality that's passed on generation to generation as the genes get mutated. And so I learned in medical school about this. And that at that time, Russia and America were blowing up bombs in the atmosphere as if there was no tomorrow. And I couldn't understand why they're dousing the northern hemisphere with radiation. What are these characters thinking they're doing? I also grew up in Melbourne, Australia, where a book called On the Beach was featured. And in fact, Ava Gabor and Fred Astaire came out to make the film, and Ava Gabor said that Melbourne was the armpit of the world, so she didn't go down too well in Australia, so we had a lot of pride and dignity. But anyway, that book really, I lost my virginity. I lost the wonderful feeling as a young woman that I'll fall in love and smell the orange blossom and everything's beautiful, because I knew that a nuclear war could occur and that would be the end of life on Earth. And that seared my soul, that book. So along with learning about Drosophila fruit fly, radiation, testing in the atmosphere and a nuclear war, that was kind of it for me. And I've wasted my life doing this instead of practicing medicine, which is a dry rot. Okay, there are basically four forms of radiation, X-rays, and I bet everyone in this audience has been zapped by us. Hands up those who've never had an X-ray. Don't let the dentist X-ray your teeth every year. It's not necessary. My ex-husband was a radiologist. They make a lot of money. It's absolutely clinically unnecessary to get your teeth X-ray. If you've got a really sore tooth with an abscess, yeah, you need an X-ray. And be tough with your doctors. We are not gods, although we may pose as gods. Don't let them put anything over you. Practice defensive medicine. Often you do not need X-rays. On the other hand, if you have pneumonia, the risk from a chest X-ray is minimal, and the benefit is great in that we can cure you. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just ask the doctor and demand information. So there are X-rays, and what you need to know is the National Academy of Science produced a report to say there is no safe dose of radiation. Despite what the NRC says and despite what your government says, there is no safe dose. What's happening in Fukushima now and over Japan, where half of Japan is now contaminated, they're raising the levels of radiation to which people can be exposed. In other words, if the water doesn't fall, you raise the bridge and you raise the dose, which is really wicked, wicked behaviour. And that's the sort of thing that will happen more and more with these nuclear power plants. So there's X-rays. Now, when you have an X-ray and the technician says, breathe and hold it, and runs out of the room and hides behind a lead glass, and it goes click, that is the instant you become exposed, but you do not become radioactive. Your genes can be mutated, and I'll explain that in a minute, but you are not radioactive. Do you understand that? Okay. And radiation is cumulative. Never walk through those blasted X-ray machines that they've got in airports. Now, how dare they irradiate the public? Fetuses are thousands of times more radiosensitive than adults. One X-ray to the pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia in the child. One X-ray. That's why when you're premenopausal and you have to have a dental X-ray, they say, when was your last menstrual period? So you have an X-ray in the first half of your cycle, but not the second, because you could be pregnant. okay? Children are 10, 20 times more radio sensitive than adults. Old people are very sensitive. And yet the nuclear industry uses a standard 70 kilogram man to be exposed to radiation and derives all their standards from that, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, so X-rays. Then there's gamma radiation given off by radioactive materials, which are like X-rays. The energy goes straight through you but doesn't stay with you. Then there's alpha radiation, which is emitted by radioactive materials like plutonium or uranium, two protons and two neutrons. Now, you can hold an alpha emitter like plutonium in your hand, and the alpha particle will not penetrate the layers of dead cells in your epidermis to damage living cells. However, if you get an alpha emitter in your lung, your bone, or inside your body, it gives a very small volume of cells a very high dose of radiation. So here's your lung, and maybe you inhale some uranium or plutonium. Those cells get a very high dose, and most die. But as radiation decreases with the square of the distance, on the periphery, cells remain viable and can become cancers. So this is a very mutagenic, very carcinogenic particle. And then there's beta radiation. You say beta. I say beta. You say beta. There's a song about that. And it's just an electron which travels further. But they all do the same thing to cells. And as I speak, know that we're not the only species with cells. There are 30 million other species that cohabit the planet with us that have cells and genes. So don't be anthropocentric. Think of the other species. So our body's made of trillions of cells, you know that. And in each cell is a nucleus, and there are 46 chromosomes. And I'm simplifying this, but in every cell there's a gene, all the genes arranged on the chromosomes, DNA molecules, which controls the rate of cell division called the regulatory gene. And what radiation does, if it hits it, see I missed it, it's random, got it, the cell will either die or the gene, the DNA molecule, changes biochemically, and that is called a mutation. And the cell sits quietly for any time from 5 to 70 years, and that's the incubation time for cancer. Whereas if I sneeze on you, 2 days later you're sneezing, or you've got flu. Measles is 3 weeks. Mumps, measles, mumps, whooping cough, 3 weeks. But cancer is a long latent period, and that's the ace up the sleeve of the nuclear industry, because it takes a long time to get cancer. And when you get it, it doesn't wear a sign saying the lump in your breast was made by some radioactive material you ate in a Hershey chocolate bar 20 years ago. Why? Because there was a meltdown 13 miles from Hershey's chocolates, and much of that area is radioactive. So what happens is the cell sits dormant 5 to 7 years. And one day, instead of dividing in a regulated way by mitosis, it produces trillions and trillions and trillions of cells, and that's a cancer. So it takes a single alpha particle to hit a single gene in a single cell to kill you. And that's what the nuclear industry do not understand. They do not understand radiation biology. Now, cancer cells are very aggressive, and they tend to infiltrate into blood vessels and go up to the brain and form secondaries in the liver. And that's what happens with cancer patients. It's called metastasis. And we generally can't cure cancer. We can cure some childhood cancers like leukemia and kidney cancers, but in trying to cure the patient, we nearly kill them anyway, because the reason we use radiation to treat cancer is because actively dividing cells are very responsive to radiation, so we're trying to kill all the cancer cells, right? That's why children are so sensitive, because their cells are actively dividing all the time. But some people who've had their cancers cured in childhood go on later in life to develop second primary cancers, because normal cells around their cancers have been mutated. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Now, there are other cells in the body that are even more important. And what are they? The normal somatic cells. What are they? Huh? What are the most important cells in your body? What?
Neurons?
No.
Sorry.
In terms of evolution.
Germ cells.
What? Germ cells.
Yeah.
Yeah, the eggs and sperm. And we're really basically physiologically here to reproduce. That's all we are really here for in terms of evolution. When we've reproduced, we've done our dash, and all the rest is gravy, you know? We actually live too long, I believe, and we've got too many people on it. So, anyway, so here's an egg and here's a sperm, and they only have half the number of chromosomes and genes. When they unite, you get a normal diploid number. Now, every gene in the egg and sperm is precious. And so if they're exposed to radiation, you're going to be damaging and mutating genes in the eggs and sperm. We all carry several hundred genes for disease. And we don't know we carry them until we mate with someone with the same gene. For instance, let's talk about blue eyes. And it's a quiz, actually. You can only have blue eyes if you've got two blue-eyed genes because they're recessive. You can have brown eyes with a brown-eyed gene because it's dominant and a blue eye, or brown eyes with two brown-eyed genes. So there were two parents who had blue eyes and they had a brown-eyed baby. So how did that happen?
Milkman.
The milkman.
Yeah.
So genetics are very important. Well, we all carry several hundred abnormal genes. So as we increase radiation in the environment from nuclear power and from medical radiation, we are increasing the incidence of genetic disease like crooked wings for Drosophila down the generations, destroying the very basic building blocks of life. And this is almost the most serious issue about nuclear power. But we won't live to see it. We have, tend to have a short-lived span. We don't really care about our descendants, do we? Well, we love our children and our grandchildren, but can we take, you know, which Indian tribe was it that didn't do anything before they considered the impact on the next seven generations? That's what we need to start doing, and we do not do that. We are anthropocentric, egocentric, and very selfish. Okay, now, oh, don't have CAT scans unless you really need them, because they give you a hell of a dose. The New York Times has been having a series on people who've been over-irradiated by the medical profession. Look it up online. They are absolutely fascinating. They've been taking little neonates and giving them whole body CAT scans. I mean, it's unbelievable what they've been doing. My colleagues tend to be sometimes irresponsible. Now, what am I going to do now? I think I'm going to... Oh, yeah, I have to do... So, in a reactor, when you put uranium in a reactor, 100 tons, like Indian Point, and you fission it, 200 new elements are made, which are all man-made, and very, very medically dangerous. The uranium becomes 1 billion times more radioactive, and in a reactor like Indian Point, you've got as much radiation as 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs. The reactors use 1 million gallons of water a minute from the Hudson, which goes back into the Hudson, somewhat radioactive, and the elements are many. Some last seconds, some last millions of years, but for instance, cesium-137 lasts for 600 years. It's a beta, remember the electron, and a gamma, emitter. And as it goes into the water, the algae suck it up and concentrate thousands, hundreds of times. Bioconcentration, it's called. Then the crustaceans eat the algae and they concentrate it more by orders of magnitude. Then the little fish eat the crustaceans, then the big fish, and we stand at the apex of the food chain. So these elements concentrate most highly in us. And they poured a huge amount of radiation into the Pacific at Fukushima. And they said, don't worry, it'll be diluted. The solution to pollution by dilution is fallacious when it comes to radiation because of bioconcentration or biomagnification. Just simple biology, okay? Now, also at Indian Point, they remove 30 tons of spent fuel rods every year that are so polluted with these fission elements that they are not effective anymore, and they're terribly radioactive. The fuel rods are 12 feet long and half an inch thick. And if you stand next to one that's just come out of a reactor, it gives out such gamma radiation, like X-rays, you will die within days from a dose just standing several seconds next to it. That's how radioactive they are, and they are thermally terribly hot. And if they're not continually cooled, they too will melt down, like happened at Chernobyl and Fukushima. So they store 30 tons of spent fuel rods, terribly radioactive, in what they call euphemistically swimming pools, either on the roof of the reactor, I don't know where they're stored at Indian Point, or down here. And because there's nowhere to put radioactive waste, they're storing the spent fuel rods and packing them closer together than these things were originally designed for. And they have to have circulating water all the time, or they will melt down, which is what happened at Fukushima. There is up to 30 times more radioactive material in the spent fuel pools than in the reactor itself. And that's just next door to you. And if there's a meltdown in the cooling pool, I just had it in my book, it can destroy an area in one cooling pool. There's been a study done at Princeton on this. Just let me see if I can find it. Yeah, if 100% of the radiation was released from a cooling pool, the contamination would affect an area about 70 times larger than that of Chernobyl. And you've got two reactors there, and you've got a third that's shut down with cooling pools as well. I'll just walk you through a few of the elements that are made. I said 200. Some last seconds, some last millions of years. Radioactive iodine, you all know about that, don't you? Where does it go in the body? Thyroid, yeah. And do you all have potassium iodide tablets in your medicine cabinets? Hands up those who do. So why don't you? Do you know what happens if there's a meltdown at Indian Point? And you happen to know it's happening, because usually you don't know till the car's passed over you and you inhale the iodine. You take the potassium iodide tablet, which blocks the uptake of radioactive iodine in your thyroid because it becomes supersaturated with normal iodine. And every person within 50 miles or 100 miles of a reactor in America must have potassium iodide tablets in their cabinets. And if you don't, why not? And who is responsible for you not knowing it? And if it was me, I would get hopping mad, really angry, and charge into the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or Governor Cuomo's office, and demand. I mean, I think Americans are so, I don't know, sort of laid back and passive and, you know, nice and have a drink or have an antidepressant or, you know, have a nice day or thanks for calling AT&T or all of this stuff. And everyone conforms, that they don't get really mad. And it's time that you did. It's time that you realise that they are spending $1 trillion of your money on death. The Pentagon is not the Department of Defence, it's the Department of War, and they kill people. And who makes the money? Lockheed Martin and Boeing, and they steal the money from you. And you don't even have a free healthcare system.
Right, yes.
In Australia, we get sick and we go to a public hospital. We have anaesthetics, the best medical care, and we pay nothing. Yes, we do. It's paid from our tax dollars. So why do you just sort of lie back like, oh, well, no, and let it happen? I don't understand the attitude or the feeling of people here that is so passive and not angry. And it's time they stop spending $1 trillion on the Pentagon, and then they say it's all for national defense and patriotism and all that rhubarb. It's tribalism. You know, let's be frank. And it's time America stopped dominating the world, because it's got no right to be in every country. My own, where my stupid Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, has just agreed with Obama, and they're almost having a love affair, that they will base Marines in Darwin. How dare they? No, you know, we'll turn into Okinawa with brothels and God knows what happening. Like the 51st state of the United States, we've got no pride or dignity. We used to. And it's time that America got the hell out of the rest of the world and left it alone, you know, and dealt with your own problems. And so that's partly what the Occupy Wall Street thing is about.
Yes.
It's revolutionary, and I think it's giving me a sense of optimism for the first time in decades.
That's right.
Radioactive iodine has a half-life of 8 days. That means if you have a pound of radioactive iodine, in 8 days it decays, so you have half a pound. In 8 more days, a quarter of a pound. Okay?
Yeah.
And it decays exponentially, so within, you multiply half-life by 20, you get its total life. Nasty stuff. And you can protect yourself against this, but nothing else. If there's a meltdown, you are totally vulnerable to inhaling or ingesting radioactive materials. Cesium-137 is a potassium analog, it's a beta and a gamma, and potassium is rich in every body cell. So it causes brain cancers, very rare muscle cancers, testicular and ovarian cancers, and mutates genes in the eggs and sperm. It lasts for 600 years. Its half-life is 30 years. Then there's strontium-90, which many of you will have heard about. It's a calcium analog, so it goes to bone, where it can cause bone cancer or leukemia. Lasts for 600 years. Last but not least is plutonium, named after who was Pluto? God of the Underworld, not the dog. The Disney dog. Plutonium is an alpha emitter. 1 millionth of a gram, or maybe 10 to the minus 9 grams, is carcinogenic. When they injected plutonium into beagle dogs, there wasn't a dose low enough that didn't give every dog cancer. Each reactor makes 500 pounds of plutonium a year. Its half-life is 24,400 years, so it lasts for 500,000 years. You need 10 pounds to make a bomb, so any country that has a reactor has a bomb factory. It is the one of the most potent carcinogens known to the human race. It's an iron analogue, so the body thinks it's iron. So it goes to the liver where it causes liver cancer, to the bone for hemoglobin formation, bone cancer, leukemia. It crosses the placenta into the developing embryo. And the placenta lets nothing pass, but it lets plutonium pass. And so you've got a little tiny embryo, normal genetically, and the plutonium will kill a cell that's going to form the left half of the brain or the septum of the heart. That's called teratogenesis, and that's what's happening in Fallujah and in Basra, where America is using radioactive weapons, uranium weapons, and uranium is excreted in the semen, and the incidence of severe congenital anomalies, babies being born with no brains and in carefully single eyes, most gross deformities, is so high now that the doctors in Fallujah have told the women to stop having babies. The incidence of childhood cancer has gone up 12 times. And because of the sanctions, the doctors can't treat the patients. The half-life of uranium-238, which you are using in your weapons, is 4.5 billion years. So you are contaminating the cradle of civilization where arithmetic began between the Tigris and the Euphrates River for the rest of time. We are participating at maybe Australian uranium. We are in the coalition of the willing. How stupid are we? So that's plutonium. Now, I want to show you this map. This is Chernobyl. Okay? And this is the fallout. Only cesium, not of americium and neptunium and einsteinium and plutonium and cesium, and I can go on and on, ruthenium and cobalt-60 and carbon-14 and tritium. Only cesium that was measured. These areas are uninhabitable, except people are still living in them. This is the Ukraine. Finland got a whopping dose. The radiation was first picked up in Sweden. Gorbachev denied it for 10 days, as they are wont to do. In England now, there are over 300 farms growing lambs that are so radioactive they can't be sold on the market for 600 years. It doesn't show Germany, but there are radioactive boars, pigs, wild pigs running around Germany, so radioactive they almost glow in the dark. France, in its arrogance, and it gets 80% of its electricity from nuclear, said the radiation stopped at their border. Go in there. Now they're relenting and saying, yeah, we're seeing cancer from here. Greece got a hell of a dose. And I've just been in Turkey, and it doesn't show Turkey on the map, but Turkey got such a dose of radiation, they picked all their radioactive tea and sent it back to Russia. But I don't eat, or I had to eat food in Turkey, which is lovely, but it's probably, much of it's radioactive. But as my doctor daughter said, don't worry, Mum, you won't live long enough to get your cancer anyway, you know. Nice to have daughters. So what Chernobyl did, one stupid man did a stupid experiment in the middle of the night, contaminated a whole continent for hundreds of years. Now, the New York Academy of Sciences has put together 500 papers that were translated from Russian to English for the first time, and over a million people have already died from Chernobyl. And the IAEA and the WHO, World Health Organization, and they have an unholy alliance where something 45 people died. This is the biggest cover-up in history of medicine, and it's wicked. And it's time we got this out to everybody. The New York Times should be, well, I've got an article in the New York Times on Friday, and the Herald Tribune, and I quote the New York Academy of Sciences article. So a million people, right? And that's only 25 years since it happened, and these elements remain radioactive for hundreds of years. Nuclear accidents never end, you see? And they know no borders or boundaries. Because the stuff goes all over the Northern Hemisphere. There's nothing we can do about it. When Fukushima happened, you can't believe how many people worked. And I was overwhelmed. What do I do? What do I feed my baby? Where do I take? And when it happened, I suddenly realized, Jesus Christ, this is irreversible. The worst thing that's ever happened, the worst industrial accident in the history of the human race. Nothing you can do about it. People here think, well, you can just take a pill, or use a water pill, or take macrobiotics, or, you know, seaweed. Nothing you can do can get radioactive elements out of your body that can cause cancer. And that's what people have to understand. Einstein said nuclear power's a hell of a way to boil water. Okay, so we'll have the next slide, I think. Yeah, this is Fukushima, the four. Don't they look really hygienic and beautiful and sort of blue and white and everything? And this is Fukushima afterwards. Unit 1, totally destroyed by a hydrogen explosion. Unit 2, very badly destroyed, although the building doesn't look bad, but the containment vessel's broken. Unit 3, almost gone. Unit 4, huge explosion, and on top there's a huge cooling pool of Unit 4 with spent fuel in it that's very fresh, and the building itself is so unstable, if there's another earthquake, that could collapse. And then you've got to be careful, because you've got a lot of fallout from Fukushima, and it's still happening all over the country. If that happened, and there were 3 meltdowns, in 1, 2, and 3, in the first 24 to 48 hours, and the Japanese government didn't tell people for 3 months. Sure. 3 months! How dare they lie to the people? And they knew where the radiation was going, so they could have told the people so they could escape. People are living in zones now that are so radioactive that in Chernobyl they were evacuated. And the Japanese people are being lied to all the time, and the children are going to kindergartens in areas that are so radioactive that the children were evacuated in Chernobyl and getting hot. See, this is what's going to happen. And we've only just begun. We've had 3 major accidents now. 3 Mile Island, Chernobyl, and now this. Now, what's happened with the meltdowns? See, what happens in the spent fuel, 100 tons is so hot, it melts without the cooling water, it melts like lava. And it melts through the reactor vessel, which is 6 inches of steel, onto the containment vessel floor, which is made of concrete. And it's called corium. And this lava mass, which is stinking hot, sits there, and there are 3 of them. And And what is predicted now is that one of them or more might melt the concrete and go through into the underground water, and then we'll get a hydrovolcanic explosion. That's called a melt through to China syndrome, where when it hits the underground water, there will be a massive steam explosion, which will spread the radiation of 100 tons of spent fuel far and wide. If that happens, I've got my baby grandchildren in Boston. I'm going to fly them out immediately to Australia, because the radiation only stays in the northern hemisphere and the two air masses do not mix at the equator. Okay? Although the fish are getting very radioactive and the currents in the Pacific are all over the place. The EPA is not testing your fish in the Pacific Ocean, in the Northwest, or in California. It's a cover-up in your country. And the fish swim thousands of miles and the currents go from north to south. I have the next slide. Well, this just shows the destruction units 3 and 4. I mean, just absolute catastrophe. More. That's looking inside the reactor. It's still pouring out huge amounts. Every day, 13,000 terabecquerels of radiation have been released from Fukushima. A terabecquerel is 10 to the 12th. Do you understand? 10 to the 6th is a million. 10 to the 12th is a million. Is that what you call a billion here? Becquerels. Becquerels is a unit of radiation are being released from Fukushima. Half the rice in Japan is grown in Fukushima Prefecture. It's coming in radioactive now. And rice for the Japanese is kind of sacred stuff. It's coming in with cesium in it, and I'm sure other stuff. There are areas in Tokyo that are so hot they should be evacuated with strontium-19 and cesium and all the other stuff. Next slide. Now this shows what happened. The first three days, this is the plume that goes across the Pacific. And they were lucky in a way because the winds were blowing from west to east. Had they blown from east to west, Japan would virtually be uninhabitable. Then at 6 days, it breached the west coast of Canada and the BC, and at 10 days, it started to engulf the west coast of the US. Next. And this shows on the accident occurred on the 11th of March. So here's the swelling, very high levels, the green levels, just hitting the west coast on the 18th. The 21st of March, the radiation had fallen all over America. It's been found. Plutonium's been found in Seattle, in Oklahoma, in New England, all over. And it starts moving towards Europe. And on the 24th of March, it's virtually engulfing the Northern Hemisphere. So these are just some of the elements, and I described them. Uranium-238, which is being used in Iraq and Afghanistan now, 4.5 million years half-life. 235 is similar, that was released. Plutonium-239, which is the one I just described, used in hydrogen bombs, seeks liver, lung and bone. Cesium-137, beta and gamma, 30 years half-life, left in large quantities from bomb production and in reactor wastes, contaminates whole body and muscle. Strontium-90 is beta, 28 years, and it's spewed by accident from Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and vented in routine, allowable release to all operating nuclear power plants. Cesium, all operating reactors release routine, it's called routine radiation every day. And there's a study done by the German government of 16 reactors in Germany, and they looked at children under the age of 5 living within 5K of the reactors. The incidence of leukemia in those children is more than double, and solid cancers is high. And the closer the children live to the reactor, the higher the incidence of malignancy. Next. This is interesting. These are azaleas in Tokyo. In early spring, soon after the accident, they died. And this is these are ginkgo trees, made hairpin trees, and you can see that they're dying in specific areas. And most certainly, that's radioactive elements like plutonium and cesium and stuff falling as particulates on the leaves, killing the leaves, and then you extrapolate from that into people's lungs and into their livers and their organs. Okay, so this is from the book, the National Academy of Sciences. These are the children being born near Chernobyl. There are homes full of children with gross deformities that we have never before seen in the history of pediatrics and medicine. This child has no eye, grossly deformed face. This one is grossly deformed. These are mentally retarded and their limbs are grossly deformed. And why don't we talk about it? Why isn't the New York Times writing about it? Where the hell is everyone? Next. Well, this is the New York Times, the New York Academy study. And what they did this because you can see the concentric rings, the xylem vessels that are normal growth. And then after Chernobyl, the growth diminished enormously in these trees. And the study is written by Yablokov and two Nestorenkos, one of whom has died. Sweet, sweet, sweet man. Next. Now, this is a study I commissioned a couple of years ago called Carbon Free, Nuclear Free by Arjun Makajani to show that by 2040, by using the sun and the wind and geothermal and conservation, you can be carbon free, nuclear free. If only you do it! If only you do it! Am I cross with you? Yes! Why are you letting the Pentagon spend $1 trillion of your money when every single house could be covered with solar panels? When you'd be pumping out windmills like in Detroit where the car companies have all gone bust and it's a rust belt. How many people would that employ? 100 millions of people. What would happen to the GDP? It would go up. You would become the leading country in the world to show the world how to survive. Survive, you know, the nuclear age and also global warming. And we've got to stop burning coal now. I just heard the president of the International Energy Agency in Turkey say that if we continue the way we're going, by the end of the century it will be 6 degrees centigrade hotter. Do you understand that's antithetical to life? We won't be here. Our children have no future. And I can't believe that no one's doing a goddamn thing about it. And Canada's bloke just stepped out of the Kyoto Protocol. Where are these people's heads? Well, most of the politicians are male, and not that I'm sexist at all, but most of them are scientifically illiterate. They've got no goddamn idea what they're doing. And you see, science is so complex these days, and scientists hand their inventions on to corporations who use them with impunity to make money, borrow my top line money. And no one really understands what's going on. You can read the literature, but you need a bit of scientific background to understand what's going on. The kids aren't being taught in schools. They're not being taught about nuclear power. I was just at the University of Albany. They're not taught about it. Now, I'm going to read you from my book about a meltdown at Indian Point. And this is for you. And then after I finish this, I'm going to describe something else, and then I'll end my lecture. Or my rave or rant. What would a catastrophe in a nuclear power plant in the US look like? Let's consider the two large Indian Point reactors located in the town of Buchanan in Westchester County, 35 miles from Manhattan. Both reactors are aging and adjacent to a very large population base. More than 305,000 people live within a 10-mile radius of the plants, and 70 million live within 15 miles. They are in close proximity to a reservoir that borders 9 million people and to the financial capital of the world. Apart from natural disaster, an Indian Point meltdown caused by a small group of people intent on wrecking disaster could readily be achieved in one of several ways. And the guys that went into the World Trade Towers had actually targeted the Indian Point reactors. Did you know that? They didn't go into them because they thought they were protected by missiles. If they'd gone into them, that would have been the end of New York City. Terrorists with suicidal tendencies could easily disrupt the external electricity supply, which is what happened at Fukushima. They lost their external power, so they lost the pumps to pump the water, and then they turned on their diesel generators, but the tsunami came in and destroyed their diesel generators. Or obtain one small speedboat, pack it with Timothy McVeigh fertilizer explosives, and drive it full tilt into the two adjacent intake pipes that suck 2 million gallons of Hudson water, cooling water, per minute into the reactors. The plant could be shut down immediately, but this would not help because of the intensity of the heat already in the reactor, which is what happened at Fukushima. Within several hours, the meltdowns would be in full swing. Alternatively, the terrorists could drive a truck packed with similar explosives into a strategic area of the plant, triggering a critical situation. Or with a few basic flying lessons, as we know, a novice pilot could fly into the reactors itself. The meltdown would take several stages, and I want you to really listen to this. First, as the cooling water leaks or dissipates from the reactor core, the intensely hot radioactive pellets in the fuel rods that I described overheat and swell, and the zirconium cladding, that's what the rods are made of, zirconium, oxidizes and ruptures. Volatile radioactive isotopes that have collected in the gap between the zirconium cladding and the fuel rods are then released as gases into the atmosphere of the containment building. These elements include the noble gases that I haven't described to you, argon, krypton and xenon, radioactive iodine and cesium, which I have described. This whole period is called the gap release phase and lasts about 30 seconds. Next, as the core continues to heat, the radioactive ceramic fuel pellets themselves will begin to melt. And as they do, large quantities of radioactive elements will be released into the reactor vessel and into the containment building atmosphere. The molten fuel will drop to the bottom of the reactor vessel. It happened at 3 reactors at Fukushima. Never before has this really happened, because Chernobyl exploded. It will melt the steel, 6 inches of steel, and drop through the vessel onto the bottom of the containment building. This period up to when the reactor vessel is breached is called the early in-vessel phase and lasts about an hour. At this point, the meltdown is irreversible. So you've got 1 hour and 30 seconds before it's irreversible. When the molten fuel, and remember when there was a cascade effect in the grid and New York City and the whole of the East Coast lost its electricity? There are diesel generators at Indian Point, but often they don't work. When the molten fuel hits the bottom of the containment building, it will violently react with water, which is what I described, which it has collected there, and with the concrete of the floor releasing even more isotopes. This is called the ex-vessel phase, lasts several hours. When the molten core hits the bottom of the reactor vessel, it may trigger a massive steam explosion, which could happen still at Fukushima, that could blow the reactor vessel apart, simultaneously creating high-velocity missiles that could rupture the containment building and violently expel the radioactive gases and aerosols into the atmosphere, which happened, because you saw the reactor containment vessels all rupture. If the reactor vessel is not itself blown apart and the molten fuel just drops through the bottom of the reactor vessel onto the floor of the containment building, it could initiate a hydrogen or steam explosion, which could still happen, which would then rupture the containment vessel, causing a rapid purge of the radionuclide content of the containment building atmosphere into the environment. This sequence involving the molten fuel penetrating the reactor vessel and containment building is similar to what the nuclear industry calls the melt through to China syndrome. Remember the China syndrome with Jane Fonda and what was the man's name?
Michael Douglas.
What?
Michael
Douglas. No, Michael Douglas.
Jack Lemmon.
He was sweet. Okay, now what I want to do now is there will be an alarm that might go off 30 minutes after the event begins, which will allow time for the operators to determine the extent of the damage. Okay, this would allow at least 78 minutes from the alarm sounding for the beginning of the radioactive release. And that's you. So take this in. I won't talk about how many. So what would happen, the best time for an attack would be the evening under the cover of darkness and when the prevailing winds blow towards New York City. But at Chernobyl, the winds turned 360 degrees in 24 hours, so it was blowing everywhere. Prospective radiation doses are calculated in several ways. During the first week, doses of radiation will be incurred from 1, inhalation and direct exposure to the radioactive cloud, you're immersed in the radioactive cloud,
exposure to the radioactive particles that deposit on the ground, which emits large quantities of gamma radiation like X-rays. That's called ground shine. Okay, ground shine. Beyond the first week, doses are calculated from ground shine, inhalation, and consumption of contaminated food and water. I won't go through it. The calculations are truly frightening. You know, many people are going to die of acute radiation sickness. The doses could be... The dose at which 50% of the population die is 250 rems. Okay, that's called the LD50, the lethal dose of 50%. What happens if you get that dose, your hair falls out, because the rapidly dividing cells of the body die. So you lose your hair, and then your gut cells die. So you get awful vomiting and nausea and terrible bloody diarrhea. And then your blood cells die, so you bleed to death because your platelets are dead, which cause clotting. And massive infection like AIDS patients die, and that happens within 2 weeks. Do you remember that man Litvinenko, the Russian, who was having tea at Claridge's in London, and someone dropped some polonium in his tea? That's how he died. Okay, and cancer deaths. I mean, it could be up to 1 million people who get cancer. And I just want to read this. Now, imagine this scene. Over 300,000 people in Westchester County are running and driving away from the stricken reactor along winding Westchester roads, stuck at traffic lights and in traffic jams. All are in a state of panic, anxiety and acute disarray, trying to reach their children at schools, their spouses and their mates. Then they begin to taste a strange metallic flavour in their mouths. That's what happened at Fukushima, Chernobyl and Three Mile Island. Then further, with each breath, exposes them to deadly radioactive gases. The radio blasts out dire warnings and nobody knows what they're doing and nobody is in control. And what about Manhattan? Millions of people trapped as the bridges in the Midtown, Lincoln and Holland tunnels are totally blocked, hiding in their apartments, hardly daring to breathe. Well, I could go on and on, you know, but that's... Now, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to do something? Are you going to close the bloody things down? And I don't care if it's the NRC and the federal government and rules and regulations and laws. This is a situation of life and death for you. And you either get a bit of guts and close it down or you don't. Stick your head in the sand like an ostrich. Okay, now you understand. And this group of people could lead the movement and you could shut down any point this year or next.
That's right.
And Cuomo wants to shut it down. Give him some leverage. Go and see him. Work with him. There must be very highly qualified people in this audience. Use your intelligence and your expertise to do it. Now, the final thing I want to do is this. Those of you who don't know, maybe I'll upset him. I don't think I'll upset people. All right.
His kid's still here.
What?
His kid's still here.
Oh, he's crazy. Yeah, okay. Okay. Now, the Cold War's over, right? Russia-America friends, right? Did you know there are 23,000 hydrogen bombs in the world today? Did you know that of those, Russia and America own 97% of them? Yet they're running around with microscopes looking at North Korea. Ooh, what about North Korea? Ooh, what about Iran? Ooh! The real rogue nations in the world, threatening the world with annihilation, are Russia and America the axis of evil? How dare they? Why do they do it? Well, nuclear weapons are, I think, for some men, are symbols of their masculinity. I wrote a book called Missile Envy. And it's a good book, and the generals hated it, but they all had a copy on their bookshelves because they knew it was true. What is it about these guys? Is their reptilian midbrain having a toxic reaction to testosterone? I don't know, but we need to make a diagnosis. Now, America's got about, I don't know, a lot, but it's got about 2,000 H-bombs on hair trigger alert. I just flew over the Dakotas, and you look down, and you see all these round things on the ground connected by roads. You'll look down, and you'll see them. In each missile silo is a Minuteman missile. In each Minuteman missile are three hydrogen bombs, much bigger than Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There are two men in each missile silo, aged 18 to 21. Yes, sir, no, sir, press the button, sir. Right?
each armed with a pistol, one shoot the other if one shows signs of deviant behaviour. So what if the deviant one shoots the normal one? All right? I've met their girlfriends. Some of them take drugs before they go down into their silos. There are two key locks 12 feet apart, but they've worked out if one man ties a string to one key, he can turn both locks and initiate a nuclear war. If the early warning satellites pick up an attack coming from Russia and the missiles only take 30 minutes to go from where to go, Obama, first of all, they learn about the attack in Omaha, Nebraska. They radio it to the Pentagon. The Pentagon gets in touch with Obama. Now, who knows what the football is? If you watch the president, always walking just behind the president is an officer with a suitcase. And in the suitcase, the codes are started with the war. It's always with him. When Reagan was shot, they lost the football for 2 days. Remember when Alexander Haig said, "I'm in charge now"?
Yeah.
Well, they lost the football for 2 days. But he's always got the football with him. And he gets 3 minutes to decide whether or not to destroy life on the planet. Same with Putin. So during that 30 minutes that the attack's picked up, then America launches two and the whole thing's over in 1 hour. It's how long it takes to destroy life on the planet. The early warning system has almost been set off by a rising moon, by a flock of geese, by computer errors. Every year we have close shaves. Every year we have close shaves. And I think in this book, The New Nuclear Danger, I wrote a few years ago, I analysed, as a physician does, how many nemesis we've had. And as a physician prognosticating the future of the planet, I don't honestly understand how we're still here. And what I would like to do now is just tell you that New York has 40 hydrogen bombs targeted on it as I speak, and yet they talk about terrorists. This is the elephant in the sitting room, the stinking elephant that's never talked about, never mentioned. It's a case of psychic numbing, you know, or displacement activity. If you put rats in a cage and threaten them with a lethal situation, they run away and do something irrelevant to that which threatens them. That's what we do all the time. Gourmet foods, new fashions, you know, all this rhubarb. It has nothing to do with whether we survive or not. There are 6 EH bombs targeted on Washington. Every town and city with a population of 50,000 or more is targeted with at least one bomb. And I'm going to describe a bomb dropping on Manhattan. And you know, sometimes you're listening to NPR and you hear, "We are just testing the emergency broadcasting system." Well, you probably won't have your radio on to know. The bomb comes in at 20 times the speed of sound and won't hear it. It explodes, let's take ground zero, with the heat inside the centre of the sun, digging a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, turning all that material to radioactive fallout. 5 miles from the epicentre, everyone is vaporised. A little boy in Hiroshima was reaching up to catch a red dragonfly in his hand against the blue of the sky, and there was a blinding flash, and he disappeared and left his shadow on the pavement, and that's in the Hiroshima Museum. Mm-hmm.